Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Hour number two of the Rob Brown Show drops now. It is the Fan Upstate. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Rob Brown, the Great Milonzo, and you. 844-FANFONE, 844-326-3663 is the number to the renewal by Anderson of the Carolinas Fan Phone. You can also text us 71307. 71307. Start your text with Fan, F-A-N. We will read them on the air. Fan, F-A-N. We will read them on the show. Like the text that came in during the break that said, Juice Wells. I love college football. It's the best. Texter said, what if Clemson loses to the Citadel and they aren't a top 25 team? It would be shocking.
Come on. They're not going to. I haven't looked up to see how good the Citadel's playing this year. I mean, they might be in contention. I don't know. How good Citadel, Rob?
I was going to say there is absolutely no reason for Clemson to lose to the Citadel, even if it's the Citadel's best year, but that might strike a chord with Gamecock fans. So I'm not going to do that. The Citadel Bulldogs are 3-0, that's their basketball team. Let's see. Let me look up the football. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know is the answer.
No, I think you're right. I think they're 3-5. Well, it should be
5-6.
That.
Yeah. Okay. They are 5-6. They have wins over Charleston Southern by a point. They beat North Greenville 54-0. They have a win over VMI, Samford, and Wofford. They have taken L's to South Carolina State, Mercer, ETSU, Furman by a point, Western Carolina, Chattanooga, and they will.
So the thing is, at 5-6, I was looking at their conference record. That's because I'm dumb. And this is their way to get bowl eligible. They got to beat Clemson.
They got to beat Clemson. I mean,
I'm sure they have another game after that, but still, you got to beat Clemson to be bowl eligible.
Everything on the line for the Citadel this weekend. They're not going to drop one to the Citadel.
You don't want to play the Citadel when they got something to play for. I mean, that's you do not want to do that.
Everything on the line for the Citadel. They're not going to. And frankly, let's keep it a buck here. Like, this isn't something that is going to happen very often. South Carolina, you better not be rooting for an upset this weekend, because I will tell you this. You're not getting into the playoffs, okay? But if you do, it's going to be because, what is it, 4 of your last 5 came against ranked teams? Because you would put together wins in all of them? Like, that's how you get in. If you can fight your way in, that's how you get in. So you're not rooting for an upset this weekend. All right, 7:03 in the morning. You are about 56 and a half minutes away from having to get clocked in, locked in, and ready for work. Don't worry. It's Friday. Friday, got to get down on Friday. Everybody's working for the weekend. But you do have to work for the weekend. And at some point today, you're going to want to step away, walk down the hallway, head to the break room, pour yourself a nice, cold, refreshing glass of water, and stand around the water cooler as you talk to your coworkers about what's going on in the world of sports. And if you don't know what's going on in the world of sports, don't you worry. We've got you covered. That's why we do this. And as the water cooler cheat sheet, the top 3 sports stories that you need to know before you get to the office this a.m. and start talking sports with your friends, family, coworkers, whoever you spend your day with. These are the 3 things you will be talking about today. Let's dive right in with item number 1. Mike Tomlin's record with the Steelers in divisional road games, 1-5-1 against the Cleveland Browns. The 5th in that 5 came last night when the Browns knocked off the Steelers 24-19 was your final. The Steelers actually took the lead in the final quarter of the contest last night. They had an opportunity late when they were able to put up 7 on the board. on a Calvin Austin 23-yard pass from Russell Wilson. That put the Steelers up one. They went for the two-point conversion to make it the field goal. It did not work. But with 57 seconds left on the clock, Nick Chubb went rumbling, bumbling, stumbling into the end zone from 2 yards out. 9-play, 45-yard, 2-minute, and 25-second drive conducted by Jameis Winston led to a Cleveland Browns tutty. That put them up 5 at 24-19. They went for the two-point conversion. It was unsuccessful, so the Steelers had an opportunity with less than a minute to play to go the length of the field after the kickoff. Russell Wilson ended up throwing about a 45-yard Hail Mary into the end zone that was knocked down, and that'd do it. 24-19, the Browns get the dub last night. Jameis Winston, 18 of 27 for 219 and one interception in the game. However, he did have a 7-yard rushing touchdown that ended up being absolutely critical. Fourth down in the pocket. Nobody's open. Jameis scrambles out to the right, takes a ton of contact as he crosses the goal line into the end zone. Able to hang on to the rock and punch it through. Nick Chubb had 59 yards, but a pair of touchdowns on the ground. Russell Wilson, not a bad night. 21 of 28, 270, one touchdown, but he was sacked 4 times in this game. Pittsburgh rushed the ball for 120 yards. Cleveland only 85. 78 yards and a touch for Calvin Austin the third. But the Steelers, when it came down to it, just a little bit of, let's say, questionable clock management from Mike Tomlin at the end of the second and fourth quarters that I think ultimately came back to bite him squarely in the buttocks. Not great. Mike Tomlin's a guy that is absolutely going into the NFL Hall of Fame, but I absolutely also think there will, should have to be conversations had about clock mismanagement by Mike Tomlin in some big games throughout his career. I don't know how big of a result this is going to end up being. The Steelers have been considered by a lot of us as a legitimate threat in the AFC. That was the end of a 6-game winning streak for the Steelers. But it also is the NFL. So we'll see what impact this L has on Pittsburgh as we get towards the end of the year. Let's get to item number 2. Your AL and NL MVPs have been announced in Major League Baseball, and to the shock of exactly no one, Shohei Ohtani of the LA Dodgers becomes the first full-time designated hitter to win an MVP. He joined the 50-50 club this year. He is in that club by himself this year. Ohtani also becomes the 12th player to win 3 MVPs, becomes the 2nd behind Stan Musial to do so within their first 7 seasons. Before Ohtani, who just won the award in both leagues, the last player to win the MVP in both the AL and NL was Frank Robinson back in the 1960s. Shohei led the NL in home runs with 54, ribbies with 130, and a 1.036 OPS, added 59 stolen bases, 33 more than his previous high. He did all of that with the betting scandal of Itsei Mitsuhara, his former translator, starting off the season. Ohtani set the Dodgers' single-season record for home runs, stole more bases than any Japanese-born player in baseball history, and became the first DH to lead his league in wins above replacement and joined Ty Cobb as the only player to finish within the top 2 in the majors in both homers and steals. Before last night, no MLB player had ever won multiple MVPs unanimously. Shohei Ohtani has now done it 3 times as he captured all 30 first place votes. also capturing all 30 first place votes, was Aaron Judge of the New York Yankees. He led the majors in homers with 58, led in RBIs with 144, and led the majors in OPS with a 1.159. He also had an 11.2 wins above replacement mark in a 2024 season that saw Aaron Judge spend most of his time in center field. And, of course, the Yankees did win the pennant and lose to, well, Shohei's Dodgers. Judge's 223 adjusted OPS was amongst the highest right-handed hitters since 1900, according to ESPN Research, became the third player with at least 50 home runs and an adjusted OPS of 200 or more. The only other two guys to do that, Babe Ruth and Barry Bonds. Pretty good list overall. Judge is the seventh New York Yankee to win multiple MVPs, joining Joe DiMaggio, Mickey Mantle, Yogi Berra, Alex Rodriguez, and Roger Maris. Before Judge, Mantle's 1956 season was the only one in Yankees history to yield a unanimous MVP vote. Shohei Ohtani and Aaron Judge both elected as MVPs, both of them unanimously. Let's get to item number three. All right, this one is going to be interesting, and we are going to talk about this a little bit more at length coming up in the next segment. Five-star quarterback Bryce Underwood, the number one quarterback recruit, according to ESPN, has been committed to the LSU Tigers for about 9 months. Until yesterday, when the 6'4", 210-pound pocket passer from Michigan decided to commit to Michigan. He is a top pocket passer in the class, becomes the highest-rated offensive commit in Michigan program history, and the top prospect in Sherrone Moore's inaugural recruiting class, which currently sits at number 14, according to the ESPN rankings. Underwood's move comes as the latest piece of quarterback movement atop the 2025 class. Since the start of the early signing period, five-star quarterback Julian Lewis decommitted from USC and subsequently pledged to Colorado yesterday as well. Underwood has been pledged to LSU since January 6th. He has been the crown jewel of Brian Kelly's 2025 recruiting class. As a matter of fact, according to some of my people down in Louisiana, down in Baton Rouge, a place where they do not play football in the snow, a lot of folks feel like the pledge of Bryce Underwood was the only thing that was preventing Brian Kelly from getting a call down to the principal's office at LSU since Brian Kelly showed up. The list of results has not been spectacular for the former Notre Dame coach, and now he has just lost the one thing that, according to a solid chunk of Baton Rouge media, was perhaps keeping him safe from the hot seat. Now, what are we going to talk about? Because you guys know, I on one hand acknowledge that recruiting is the lifeblood of college football. I on one hand acknowledge that it must be discussed and talked about, and a story like this one is obviously of great importance in the landscape of college football. I obviously understand that on one hand, these types of stories are major deals in the college football landscape. On the other hand, Rob Brown hates following recruiting. I don't like it, all right? I will talk about a recruiting class 2 years after they show up and start playing football.
It's really surprising because you're such a stats guy, analytics guy, and most of recruiting seems to be in that vein to me.
I've said it before, and I'll say it again. We won't spend a ton of time on this, but I'm happy to explain it. I've watched a lot of high school football in the day. I've called it play-by-play in color. I've been around it for years and years and years. And one of the things that I pointed out for a very long time is you can go like they did with Bryce Underwood and point out that Bryce Underwood made his way onto the radar because in 2021, he threw for 2,888 yards, 39 touchdowns in his freshman season at Belleville High School, led the Tigers to back-to-back state titles in his first two seasons under center, and then earned Michigan Gatorade Player of the Year award honors as a junior in 2023, completing 64.8% of his passes for 3,329 yards and 44 touchdowns, guided Belleville to a third consecutive state title game. And if he can get another one this year, that'd be 4 years, four state championships. There's something to be said for that. But on the flip side of that discussion,
that sounds unprecedented.
Sure
probably,
does.
Probably isn't, but it sounds like that isn't done very often.
Sure does. And I think there is something to be said that obviously those numbers stand out. Obviously, that is something nobody else has done. Obviously, that makes the guy a pretty good quarterback. On the flip side,
would he have better stats if he played somewhere where there wasn't snow?
Probably. Because you can't do things as efficiently in the snow as you can not in the snow. But forget all that. We're not going down that path again. Because I've already been chided for being angry in the first hour of the show. What I will say is there not, and I don't mean this disrespectfully, so no one take it that way. It is one thing, great one, as somebody who's been in and around the high school football scene in this area for a long time. If I told you a kid went out and threw for 265 yards and three touchdowns on the road at Dorman or at Gaffney, would that have the same impact as saying a kid went out and threw for 265 yards and three touchdowns at Wren? No, right?
No, because it's about conference and competition.
Absolutely.
And all that stuff, for sure. And when you were talking about his stats before you said where he was from, I was thinking, oh, okay. But Michigan's got pretty good, believe it or not, people in the South, there is good high school football elsewhere, and they've got pretty good high school football.
Sure. I'm not anti any of that. What I'm saying is, respectfully, as somebody who doesn't only talk about college football, right? Recruiting is wonderful if your show is just only college football. And I'm not saying that's bad. For some guys, that's the show they want. They just only want college football. But here on the Rob Brown Show, we're well-rounded, both physically and metaphorically. Lonzo and I talk hockey and UFC and wrestling and baseball and soccer and just about every other sport except pickleball and lacrosse. All right? Like, we talk a little bit of everything. So what I don't have, respectfully, is time to go look at the opponents that Bryce Underwood took on and go, well, he did all this, but against this school, and this school had these wins, and they did it. I don't know Michigan high school teams, and I'm going to, because I got too much of the crap to pay attention to.
He went up against this prospect that's going to this school from that high school, and then they had 3-4 stars that he beat on this. It's a lot of work.
Right. Yeah. And I will let the recruiting bros do all of that. I will follow the biggest names when recruiting season gets here. But I'm not taking time away from being the best NFL talker I can be, being the best offseason MLB talker I can be, being the best NBA talker I can be, to go break down the numbers and opponents of a high school quarterback out of Michigan.
So is this a story because of Brian Kelly, or is this a story because of the money?
This is a story because the reports are, and this is why we're going to come back and talk about this a little bit more in the next segment of the show. This is because, while this is not necessarily, and we don't know, although all of us are happy to speculate, this is because allegedly there's an NIL deal on the table for Bryce Underwood out of Ann Arbor, Michigan, that clocks in to the tune of 4 years, $10.5 million with an M dollars for a 17-year-old high schooler. And we're going to talk about that NIL deal and the impact that it has on college football and get your thoughts on it when we come back on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Chris Miller from the Gamecock Radio Network joins us coming up in the next segment. We'll talk about the win over Mizzou, as well as his thoughts on what he expects to see in the Gamecocks' tune-up game tomorrow against Wofford as they get ready for the Palmetto Bowl the week after that. We got Rashad Beard coming up at 9 o'clock, and I am waiting to hear back from our boy Kevin Thomas from the Moving the Chains pod. We will have them on at either 8:40 or 9:20 to get you set up for the second round of the high school playoffs around the upstate and around the state of South Carolina. All that coming up as the show progresses ever forward. So, the rumor out there is that Bryce Underwood is catching a deal, an NIL deal, 4 years, $10.5 million to flip his commitment from Baton Rouge, Louisiana's LSU up to Ann Arbor, home of Big Blue, and go be a nemesis of Lonzo's for the next handful of years. So the interesting thing...
Or until he gets paid more somewhere else.
I mean, there ain't nowhere else that's paying more than that than the NFL. And even the NFL likely isn't handing a rookie quarterback that kind of contract. There is a realistic possibility that NIL deals, and this may be a step in that direction, great one. There's a realistic possibility that NIL deals start to exceed rookie NFL contracts, that guys are getting paid more to stick around at college than they would be to go get drafted and go to the league, at the quarterback spot.
Will that affect rookie contracts in the NFL? Will they make the money go up?
I don't know. I don't know is the answer. I don't know how Roger Goodell and the NFL handle that. Maybe, maybe not.
Do you consider that in the same market? You do, right? So if the market rises at a lower level, you've got to raise it in the higher level.
Well, let's start with this. The NFL ain't got to do a gosh darn thing. The ratings aren't going up or down based on a rookie quarterback. So the only issue that would be the case is if owners and coaches come out and go, we want to make sure these guys come out quicker, right? Like, that's the only way it moves.
At the same time, it's probably, maybe the NFL is glad about this because you're not getting guys too young because they're getting paid where they are, and so they can take their time to develop more so when they get to the NFL, they're a better player.
Sure. Again, like, there's 100 ways to attack this from the NFL standpoint, but looking at it from the standpoint of college football, there is a spot. I've said this for a long time. I think a lot of you guys are approaching this the wrong way. Because what I have seen a bunch of is, like Zach just said, respectfully, in the chat, Zach just said, no athlete is worth $10.5 million ever, not one. Zach, just like everything else, something is worth whatever someone is willing to give to them. That's how it works. That is the system of neo-capitalism that we exist in. Something is worth as much as someone is willing to fork over for it. If I go into a bar, I'm a wine guy. I'm a champagne guy. All right, I like the finer things in life.
Is that like a now thing? Because I thought you were a bourbon guy.
I'm a bourbon guy too. I'm an everything guy. I'm as well rounded in my liquor taste as I am my music taste.
I didn't know if after you got married, you automatically became a wine guy.
No, I've always been a wine guy.
Okay.
All right. I love wine. But, and I use champagne for this example. When I was, 22, 23, my parents took me on a cruise. And we, one night, got randomly selected to sit at the captain's table for dinner. Basically, when you came into dinner in the dinner hall, every night the captain would just select a group of families to sit with him at the captain's table. It's a big honor. It's a big privilege to sit with the captain, right? El Capitan. And we got to. And one of the things that came along with getting selected to sit at the captain's table was that everybody at the table got a glass of Dom Perignon. This is the creme de la creme of champagnes. And I got to tell you, I drank it. And it was gross. I don't get it. I've had $10, $12 bottles of champagne that were better than Dom Perignon. I don't get it, okay? However, even though I'm not spending $170 on a bottle of Dom Perignon, some people will, which makes the Dom Perignon worth $170, right? Because if nobody was buying it, the price comes down. It's the same with NFL or with college athletes. Somewhere out there, as Fievel would say, somewhere out there, is an alum.
I was hoping you realize what you just did. So yeah, okay.
I know what I did. I know what I did. Fievel Goes West, baby. That's a formative Rob Brown flick. Somewhere out there is an alum that's sitting on a few hundred thousand, bazillion, million, trillion dollars that went, I'd really like that guy to play here at Michigan. I'll fork over. I mean, if I got to put $10.5 million in the pot, so be it. I'll put $10.5 million down to make that happen. Do you know what that makes Bryce Underwood? Worth $10.5 million. Now, much like Ferraris and Lamborghinis, you know what else it does? It prices him out of a lot of other schools. It prices him out of a lot of other programs that can't come off $10.5 million. The only thing I've ever said here, because I will keep it a buck with you. Even I looked at that and I'm like, how do schools compete, right? Now, first off, it's kind of always been this way. It's just that it used to be under the table. The only thing I've said here is if you want to make an argument for what is effectively a salary cap, if you want to make an argument for schools should only be allowed to organize X million dollars to send to athletes, if you want to make an argument that schools should only be allowed to pay $5, $10, $15, $20 million in total NIL compensation to their entire roster, I'm totally fine with that. I am totally fine with setting rules that are reasonable, but, and I've said this as well, because of the fact that you did not do this at the beginning of the NIL period, the next step you have to do is if you are going to set down those guidelines, because I've heard the argument, oh, you gotta have a salary cap. I fine by me. I'm good with that. But much like the NFL and the MLB and all these other organizations that have salary caps do, you have got to sit down with the players. You have got to sit down with the players and allow them to have a voice in the discussion of what that cap is going to be. You can't just arbitrarily say, $1 million, that's our cap. That's the same as saying no NIL at all. And considering the NCAA effectively has a monopoly on college football right now, you're not protected from doing that, right? That's why there is a players union at the NFL. Now, you can even go so far as to say you can set it up. Freshmen don't get a voice at the table, right? Incoming freshmen don't get a voice. We're going to let sophomore, juniors, and seniors represent college football players and sit down and have a voice and come to an agreement about the all right, we're only going to allow a team to put out $25 million a year in total NIL to the entire roster. But we're also going to allow them to do this, and this for compensation to players and allow the college football players to. We've talked about this before. A lot of people, what I'm saying here is don't attack the players. Don't attack the players. I said this on BetMGM Tonight the other day. I don't know what my value is to the, I mean, I know what my value is to this company, but for the sake of the conversation, I don't know what my value is to this company. But if the boss came to me tomorrow and said, Rob Brown, we'd like to pay you $2 million a year to do this show, you think I'm saying no to that? You think I'm saying no to that? You think I'm going to look around and go, well, Lonzo only makes $1 million a year, and I'm not more important than him, so I'm going to say, no, of course I'm going to say yes to that, and I'll buy Lonzo something very nice for Christmas. All right?
Dude, if you're making 10 and I'm making 1, you don't need to buy me nothing. I'm good.
Correct, but you get the point. In my heart of hearts, I'd be like, am I more important than that, right? Some of you going, is Bryce Underwood really $10.5 million worth important? There's going to be guys in that locker room that are just as important to the team that aren't making that. Yeah, of course there are. But somebody somewhere decided Bryce Underwood's worth $10.5 million. Don't get mad at Bryce Underwood for that. Don't get mad at Bryce Underwood for that. Get mad at the NCAA. Get mad at the system itself that set this up, that allowed him to accept that money, not him for taking it. You want to be mad? I'm fine with being mad. But be mad at the system. Change the system. Push the system. Push the NCAA to be changed. Don't go on Twitter and cuss out Bryce Underwood because somebody offered him $10.5 million. I got to tell you right now, I'd sign it too. Y'all, I can't stand the Atlanta Falcons, but if they signed me to a $2 million contract to come be the voice of the Falcons, I'd wear red and black every day of my life for it.
We already had a guy transfer to Michigan. You don't want to follow him.
$10 million, Lonzo? I'll tell you how much I love football in the snow.
Wow. Wow.
There's a word.
We now know the price.
Everybody's got a price in the $1 million man. Chris Miller, the voice of the pregame and postgame show for your South Carolina Gamecocks, joins us next to talk about the Missouri.
We're going to go watch the Missouri's
play.
Missouri.
Talk about the win over the Missouri Tigers last week, the game against Wofford, and maybe even a little way too far in advance Clemson preview, all coming up on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate. You will hear the dulcet, seductive tones of our next guest if you turn in to the South Carolina Gamecocks pregame and postgame show, because he is not only a 137-time winner of the South Carolina Broadcasters Association Sportscaster of the Year Award, he's also the host of the pre- and the postgame show for the South Carolina Gamecocks. He is a good buddy on and off the air, just a good dude overall, and I'm proud to say I know him. My man, Chris Miller, joining us here on the show. What's up, big fella?
Morning, guys. Good morning. It's a football Friday, then a football Saturday. It's my favorite time of the year. It's like Christmas for me.
It's like Thanksgiving for all of us. I don't want to jump the gun and jump into the Clemson stuff just yet, Chris, because we are still a week out. There is still a Wofford Terrier team waiting out there, so let's take these things one at a time. 88 in the DeLorean, back to last Saturday. Third consecutive win for the Gamecocks over a top 25 team. First time in school history that they've strung three ranked wins together back to back to back. 30,000-foot view, Chris Miller. What are the two or three things you think that were the most important in that win over Mizzou before we dial into the X's and O's?
I think when you look at what they had done the last three SEC games, which were all three wins by 21 or more points, many Gamecock fans and, frankly, the national outlook on it was South Carolina win this game going away. Remember, we were talking last week. They were 14-point favorites going into the game. South Carolina had the big lead. They jumped out to a large lead, and then here comes Missouri. And if you're a Gamecock fan, you're saying, here we go. Eli Drinkwitz had beaten the Gamecocks five consecutive times, was 5-0. And they go down the field and score to take that 30-27 lead with a minute 15 left in the game. He just torched your defense, which, again, has been your bell cow the entire season. And I think everyone in that stadium was just frustrated. And here we go. We're going to find a way to lose to Missouri. You know, all the great we've done this year. And here we're going to lose to a Missouri team who most people thought was extremely overrated. But I think Lenore Sellers showed not just South Carolina fans, not just the SEC, but the nation, that he is a serious, legitimate SEC top-tier quarterback with that drive at the end of the game. 57 seconds, marching right down the field with his arm. This was not Lenore Sellers breaking off a big run. This was Lenore Sellers going through his read. I thought the throw to Delvion Campbell was one of the best plays by a South Carolina quarterback in years. Not that the throw was anything incredible, but how he went through his reads. Campbell was his third choice on that play, and he allowed the route to develop. He stepped up in the pocket, moved around, didn't take off running, and Campbell was loose and able to get, you know, 40 yards of yak after that catch. That, to me, everyone's going to point to Rocket Sanders' play. That was fantastic. Don't get me wrong. But that throw to Campbell changed the dynamic. I think before that throw, Southcon was thinking, can we get it down for an Alex Rare field goal attempt? But once you got that throw to Campbell, which ended up being a 40-yard gain, now you're thinking, okay, we're going to win this football game. The heck with kicking the field goal. Let's go for the win. So I think that singular play, to me, was the maturation of Lindenworth Sellers because of the throw, because of the reads, and because he didn't take off running.
The development of Lenora Sellers, we've talked quite a bit about it, and I said this earlier on the show, Chris Miller. I owe Del Oggins and Shane Beamer flowers in apology because dating back to the Ole Miss game, I on these airwaves said multiple times, like, I don't see the development. And I see the physical tools. I see the guy's got it in him. I just don't see that development yet. And that has, since that Ole Miss game, it feels like has been exponential growth out of this young guy. Here's the question, though. With that angle, do you think that the complaints about Dow Loggins' offense and the play calling, which were there from the public, whether you agree with them or not, were being made at the beginning of the year, have we seen a difference because of the development of Lenora Sellers? Do those two things go hand in hand, or has there been something else? Or do you think the play calling has changed at all? Are we just seeing better execution now? Where do you kind of land on that spectrum?
I think yes to all the above. I think one of the key things that's happened is Mike Shula. Mike Shula was hired by the Gamecocks coaching staff to be a special assistant, and he has played a huge role in the development of Lenora Sellers. This is a guy that's a former NFL offensive coordinator, as is Dow Loggins, and I think the two of them have worked together. Also, you got to keep in mind, in that game against Ole Miss, Lenora Sellers, and that they were still hurt. Sellers got injured against LSU. Keep in mind, against Old Dominion, that was his first start, struggled a little bit in that. He played well on the road at Kentucky, and he played extremely well in that first half against LSU. He gets hurt right before the end of the first half, struggles in that loss to struggled the next few games, and then finally he gets healthy. And during that time, he was taking those mental reps, and I think when you have a chance to sit back and watch as a quarterback, you can really see where you can grow. And he did that. But I credit Dow Loggins again to making the correct calls with your talent on hand. And a lot of credit goes to Mike Shula. It's not being talked about, but he's been behind the scenes working. You can actually, there is some footage that the SEC Network put out of Coach Shane Beamer was mic'd up. And you can hear him on that last drive saying, "Mike, tell him to hold on to the football." And Beamer is telling Mike Shula to remind, who's getting the signals in to Lenora Sellers, just that reminder, hey, we're in a field goal range. Don't do anything silly. Don't make a mistake. Don't force it. We got the field goal in our pocket. We want to go for the win. But just that reminder, something Mike Shula, that just shows you evidence Mike Shula is playing a big role in that development of Lenora Sellers.
Chris Miller joining us here on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate, talking a little bit more about that. South Carolina win 34-30 over the Missouri Tigers last Saturday. You talked about this. We've talked about this. It has kind of been a phrase that's been utilized quite a bit this year around the Gamecocks, and that's the concept of finishing, closing, winning, coming up in these spots like LSU, like Alabama, but finding a way to be the team that shuts the door and not have the door shut on you. And it felt, I mean, it was a, we talk about the touchdown from Rocket Sanders, which, by the way, because Sellers is a threat to the outside, that shuttle pass, mwah, phenomenal, French kiss, as far as play calling in that moment at that point in time, Chris Miller. The fact was, there was a whole drive that led up to that touchdown that I thought was masterfully orchestrated and executed. We talked last week going into that game about how weird is this, that this is the first time in as long as I can remember that the South Carolina Gamecocks go in expecting to beat a ranked team. That was the first time this year with the game on the line in a clutch drive that I went, I think they can do this. I think they got this. That, to me, Chris Miller, is the ultimate tip of the cap to the evolution of this football team this year.
It is. And you go back to that drive, not only, again, I mentioned Campbell, but how about Brady Hunt, right? Backup tight end. If you remember the beginning of that drive, Lenora Sellers is chased out of the pocket, plays Superman, goes out, runs backwards, breaks a tackle. Then Brady Hunt, the backup tight end, comes back to his quarterback and makes a catch. Not only does he get the catch, but he dives and gets the first down, and that jump starts the drive. Because how many times have you seen in football a drive that dies immediately because you lose 15 yards in the first play because of a hold, a sack, something like that, and the drive's over? But that first down jump started because the next play, he hits Delvin Campbell for the 40-yard gain where South kind of suddenly says, okay, we can win this football game. And again, those plays, three magical plays on that drive, the Hunt catch, the Campbell, obviously the Campbell catch and run. Then you had the Rocket Sanders touchdown. And Rocket would not be denied. I mean, that guy broke, we counted six tackles on that 10-yard. Once he got the ball, he got hit at the 10. He was knocking tacklers off, pushing away like bowling pins. And then I'm sure you guys saw this on social media. Actually, there were people on their phone that were getting earthquake alerts in the stadium because they were saying earthquake, duck and cover, seek shelter. I mean, that was legitimately happening in the stadium because it was shaking that much. And I sit up there in the booth and I'm like, my cup. So it's like it was doing that. The press box was shaking that bad on that play. I mean, there's an old saying, if it ain't swaying, we ain't playing. And that was legitimately happening at Williams-Brice.
We talked after the Texas A&M game, Chris Miller, about, you know, the recruits that were in the building that night. And it wasn't just that you won. And it wasn't just that you decisively won. It was the atmosphere that the decisive win took place in. I told you, like, I was very happy that night because YouTube TV was carrying a commercial-free stream. They didn't have commercials on there, so whenever there was a break, they'd go to an up top of the stadium cam, and you got to see the light show and hear the sound and all that, and there was no, please welcome to the north end zone, the CEO of that local bank. Like, it was like, oh, we're at break? Club Willie B's popping up in here tonight. And I'm like, as a recruit, that's the kind of stuff I'm into. But then you turn around, you put that win together. You do it in a late afternoon game. So you show, hey, we don't need that. We'll take the lights and Club Willie B, but we don't need it. And then you add that electricity, that atmosphere, and the fact that there were, and I know this is happening because I saw on Twitter that there were seismological warnings happening around Columbia, South Carolina. Chris Miller, these are the kind of things that if there's a recruit in that building watching that game, they're looking around going, hey, damn, that's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. I think I could see myself fitting in real well here. There's a recruiting bump coming for the South Carolina Gamecocks. There already was one because Shane Beamer's a wonderful culture builder. But, like, these are the games that win you games 2-3 years from now because the players are going, yeah, I want to be a part of that.
And it keeps the players here. We live in an NIL world where it's who has the most money, but we're getting to where the majority of these teams are getting kind of close. South Carolina had been behind in the NIL landscape, but has since caught up and can now compete with Georgia, Alabama, you know, insert whoever you want in here. So now it comes down to, as you said, if I'm a recruit, what am I truly making a decision on? The money's pretty much equal. I'm making a decision on coaches and atmosphere. And if I'm a recruit, let's say a Dylan Stewart, let's say a Lenore Sellers, some of that recruit, but a player that is on your roster who's, let's face it now, in today's world, it's constant recruiting. You know, you're playing teams that are recruiting your own players. You're recruiting your own players each year. So do I really want to leave this atmosphere? Do I really want to go play for another coach and restart? No. South Carolina can compete in those worlds. So, I mean, it's you look at where South Carolina is, and let's take this state. If I'm a recruit, and this is a big question I ask, and I ask this not in with my Gamecock glasses on, but just general, would I rather play today for Clemson or South Carolina? Everything else being equal. I think 2 years ago, that was an easy question, easy answer, Tigers. I don't know if many recruits can say that anymore. I don't know if they can say because South Carolina now is showing they can compete nationally. They are going out, as you said, they beat three consecutive nationally ranked teams. They're number 18 in the latest college football playoff. This is a team that is in the national championship conversation. Are they going to make the playoffs? Probably not. But people are talking about them. People are saying they may. And you've got your quarterback. That's the big thing, too. You got a quarterback that's only a sophomore next season that could potentially take you to that promised land. Something the Gamecocks have never had in their existence, a quarterback the caliber of Lenore Sellers as a freshman.
Chris Miller, hosts the Gamecock pre- and post-game show, joins us here on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate. Look, I could do this with Chris Miller for another damn hour. That's the juice that's happening right now. But my man's got a fun run to go attend. Are you running? Are you showing up the boy? Are you letting him know Pops has still got it? Or are you going to let him kind of sow the oats a little bit today?
It's his day to sow the oats. He's going to get out and get some running done, and I'll be there to cheer him on. It's like 35 degrees, so I'm going to have to pack my parka.
I dig that. You got to give him 3-4 more years, then you got to go put 21 on him on a basketball court and remind him who's who, right?
Yeah, we do that on the baseball field. When he gets kind of cocky with the baseball bat, I'll line up and say, you know, I used to be a pretty good pitcher myself.
So yeah.
Slow it down, Dad.
Chris Miller.
Just hit the gas.
Kind enough to join us to talk Gamecock football on Fridays. I did just get a text. 20-second answer, because I know the answer, you know the answer, but I'll address it because the listener asked. Texter said, hypothetically, if Brent Venables at OU gets canned, would Beamer jump ship and head back to OU?
I don't think so. I don't think Oklahoma has – I mean, he liked his time there, but again, he was there for a couple of years. I really think the culture he's built at South Carolina, I don't know – now, 2 years ago, maybe, and then, you know, there was a lot of talk when that job opened. You know, Beamer just completed his first year at South Carolina. He was a candidate. He never really had an interest in going back. I think he knows what he's got building at South Carolina. It would take a huge job, and I don't even know if he would leave it for that there, because he's got a young family, and they really like Columbia.
And on top of that, they let him build the whole thing in his image. I don't know if OU does. Chris Miller joins us to talk Carolina football on Fridays. My man, thank you again, big dog. We'll talk to you. We'll figure out what we're doing next week, because it's rivalry weekend, my man.
Mm-hmm. Can't wait.
Chris Miller, an absolute icon and a legend. So's Lonzo. Time for a sports flash.
Yep, I am legendary. The Cleveland Browns ended the sixth game win streak of the Pittsburgh Steelers last night. With a 24-19 win, Cleveland allowed a Pittsburgh touchdown late, but answered within the final minute to take the lead and prevented a Hail Mary touchdown at the buzzer, all in glorious snow. Jameis Winston had 219 yards and a rushing touchdown, and Nick Chubb ran for 2 in the win. Pittsburgh is now 8-3, while Cleveland is 3-8. The number one recruit in college football, quarterback Bryce Underwood, flipped his commitment from LSU to Michigan last night. The 6'4", 210-pound pocket passer has reportedly been offered an NIL deal worth over $10 million for 4 years. Tune in tomorrow at 1:30 as Furman Paladins take on the Mercer Bears. It's Furman versus Mercer right here, the last game of the season for the Furman football team on the Fan Upstate.